Dear Diary.
Dear Diary.
Dear Diary.
Dear Diary.
Dear Diary.
Now that I'm a grown man with a wife and a 14-year-old son, I completely understand why Miss G was so desperate for me to imagine a world that didn't involve violence.
I share the lessons from Room 203 with my daughters. I tell them constantly that they must never be prejudiced against anyone.
We knew that racism was still alive and well in American society, but history is repeating itself.
Ironically, the people that were my enemies became my family.
The same people that I would have aimed a gun at are the same people I would take a bullet for.
I wrote so hard sometimes my pen cut through the page like a knife. My words were so full of my pain that the paper couldn't hold it all.
It's amazing that 20 years after we left Wilson High, the Freedom Riders still choose to support each other.
By choosing to share my story, I have become a beacon of light.
I look at the young man in the front row, my son, and I smile.
I am passing the torch.
I'm passing the torch.
20 years later.
20 years later, the Freedom Riders are still together.
Still changing the world, one word at a time.
These are the voices of the Freedom Riders, reading exclusive excerpts from their new stories in the 20th anniversary edition of the Freedom Riders Diary. For several weeks, they gathered to brainstorm and emerged having selected topics and identified authors to tell their most authentic stories. Just like in Room 203, they created a safe and empowering space by nurturing and supporting one another. They listened, they encouraged, and with the power of 20 years of friendship beneath their wings, they took flight, crafting honest and gritty diary entries for audiences both young and old. Now, you and I are on this journey to discover how the Freedom Riders' stories have evolved since Room 203. How do they connect the dots between the original book and their new stories today? And what can all of us, no matter our age or background, learn from their growth? This is Freedom Rider 2020, a special mini-series on the Freedom Riders podcast celebrating 20 years of the Freedom Riders' Diary. I'm your host, Bryce Sirier, and I'm honored to delve even deeper with you into the making of the 20th anniversary edition of the book, now available wherever books are sold. We'll hear from Aaron Gruel, the Freedom Riders, and even some of the Freedom Riders' children, following up on the stories from Wilson High School and shining a light on the Freedom Riders' legacy for a new generation. This is Episode 3, Dear Diary.
I'm curious, what were the mechanics of the editing? How does one go about trying to manage this massive collective process?
I think for any English teacher, what was so exciting for me is we say that writing is a process. And for the 20th anniversary, it was just that. It was a process. During the week when we were on our own, we were sending emails and Google Docs and drafts, and we would print out each and every draft, and then we would do table reads. We would sit in a circle and read and add and suggest and start over. So in honor of that craft of writing, they really dedicated themselves to being just that, to be artists, to be storytellers, to roll up their sleeves, to agonize, and then have that Virginia Woolf moment of stream of consciousness and go. Those were my favorite lines, when they were just able to go and purge and write with reckless abandon. You know, we'll worry about those commas and those periods and those grammar mistakes later, just write. And so it was really exciting. It was electric.
I asked Aaron and the Freedom Riders to compare and contrast their experiences in Room 203 with writing again today. What was going through their minds as the overarching structure of the new stories started to take form?
For me, I felt like the stories before were a little bit more hidden and you wouldn't want to disclose your information. I feel like there was more of a triumph with these stories. It was really more of a writing team that had matured.
When we get together, we would make sure we had something on paper for the next meeting. And we will read it aloud, and then we'll get feedback from everybody there.
We definitely brainstormed on how the flow should go and what story should go where. That was definitely a huge part of the process.
I'm a big person when it comes to continuity in telling a story. So I love the fact that so many things just matched up well for this book. It was like connect the dots. That's what it was about.
I felt like I was in college all over again as we got even closer to the finished version. I was pulling all-nighters. Freedom Riders were doing all-nighters. Every single word had to pierce the page. Every single word had to matter.
On this episode, Aaron and the Freedom Riders give us an inside look into those stories. Those words that do matter and that do pierce the page, along with every heart that reads them. How did they write and edit together? How did the final stories form, and what can we gain from their author's perspective all these years later? the Freedom Writers are gracious enough to give us sneak peeks of their new stories, illuminating some of the most iconic Freedom Writer moments and demonstrating incredible wisdom and accountability. As such, they're not just explaining what they wrote about, but revealing how writing their new stories has affected their growth and healing. Freedom Writers started to open up about the struggles and burdens they continue to carry, and how they're still striving to overcome. All that after the break.
Hello, I'm Erin Gruel, and I'm so grateful for the generosity and support of Waldorf University, our proud sponsor of this exciting miniseries, Freedom Writer 2020. Not only is Waldorf's mission aligned with our student-centered methodology, the Freedom Writers and I are blessed to personally know their passionate educators and respect their commitment to academic excellence. They've hosted me at their esteemed campus, and in turn, we welcome two of their own at our teacher institutes. Dr. Robert Alsop, the university president, and Dr. Frieda Braddock, the program director of graduate education, are both cherished members of our Freedom Writer Teacher Network. We love them like family and trust them to humbly serve their students. I know that many of you listeners are fellow educators. The truth is, as teachers, we spend countless hours and our own resources to serve our beloved students, which leaves little room for advancing our own education. Many of you may want or even need that additional certification or that master's degree, but think, how can I afford the time and the cost? If you're looking for a way to advance in your teaching career without putting your career on hold or breaking your piggy bank, Waldorf University's online Master of Education degree is perfect for you. With two concentrations available, either leadership or teaching and learning, the master's program is completely online with terms starting every single month. That way, you can choose what's best for you and your schedule while continuing to engage, enlighten, and empower your students. To learn more about Waldorf University's Master of Education program, simply go to waldorf.edu/freedomwriters or click on the link in this episode's show notes.
For the average person, identifying the beginning of a story from their real life is not an easy task. But for the Freedom Writers, the moment that started it all is indelibly etched into their minds. If you've seen the movie or read the book, you'll recall that incident in the classroom, with the note and the question, and the far-from-average English teacher who recognized the opportunity within the conflict. I sit down with Melvin, the student who drew that picture back in 1993.
I was a real jerk back then. I'm not even going to try to pretend to be anybody else that I wasn't. I was a knucklehead, man. I had been kicked out of school once already. Been running the streets, trying to be as tough as I can with my classic Cortez and my Dickies. I was a little thug. Luckily, I had come back, and that's when I met Miss Gruel. So Sherrod was from Poly. And they had a great football team over there. So when he came over here, he was bragging. He was a real jerk too. And I remember we were sitting in the class one day. We were going back and forth. So I was sitting back there and I drew this picture of Sherrod with these big lips and these big exaggerated facial features. And I started passing it around.
I was like, wow, he's gonna come back with a kind of comeback or something. But he was actually pretty hurt.
This is Carlos, Melvin's friend who was in the classroom on that day.
I thought it was funny. We all did, but that's when Ms. G actually took the paper and saw it. And she started talking to us about racism and what the Nazis did in World War II. She mentioned something about they were making fun of Jewish people, drawing them with big noses and stuff like that back in the Holocaust.
Ms. G went apeshit. She lost it. Man, I can still see the steam coming out of her ears and how red her face got, how upset she was. And I didn't think it was gonna blow up like that.
So that's when the big question came up. That's when I raised my hand and I asked her, what is that? What is the Holocaust?
You know, I never would have thought that drawing a picture would have given me a full education on the Holocaust. I had no clue. And that picture is the picture, you know. That was kind of the day the idea kind of sparked. Here we are now.
That I lived in real life, that actually changed me completely all the way around. It changed my ways of thinking towards other races. It made me realize that we all get cut, we all bleed the same color.
Now that I look back in retrospect, I can really go back and see how bad that could have been, where it could have gone, especially with what's going on in the schools today. It was a very dangerous moment.
20 years later, that storyteller is a father, and he wanted to reflect that what did not happen then was fisticuffs. What did not happen then was a fight or guns or a funeral. What happened was healing. What happened was friendships were forged. What happened was a movement. And what happened today, what happened with his story was an apology, accountability, owning his story and saying, I'm sorry.
One thing I did want to do is show my remorse for that day. And I don't think I've ever had a chance to really vocalize it. So I just kind of wrote with my heart. You know, I didn't really have any direction I was going to go. I just sat down at my computer one day and I just wrote about where I am in my life today in relation to my wife and my son, some of the fears that I fear for my son going to school. He's getting ready to be a freshman, so I'm kind of nervous for him, you know, and a lot of my experiences back then shaped the way that I raised my son. So I tried to keep him sheltered and away from those things in the streets. So that's what I wrote about and tried to let people know where my head and my heart and my life is right now.
As Melvin stepped forward to apologize for the broader implications of his past actions, another freedom rider in the room recognized his opportunity to expound on the incident. This is Calvin, Sherrod's little brother.
So Sherrod's my older brother, and if I actually would have saw that note the day that it was written, I would have never liked Melvin. I would have hated him. Of all people in this world, there's so many people in this world, Sherrod is one of the very few people in this world that you do something to Sherrod, you do something to me. I wouldn't have liked Melvin. I'd had a real big problem with Melvin. To see that as an adult and realizing that Sherrod got over it, it was made it very easy for me to get over it. And knowing that he brought Melvin into my life, it showed me how much he truly got over it. Because someone to do something as malicious as Melvin did, and for them both to say, you know what, it was just a bad idea, we were just in a bad place at that time, and for them to hug and become brothers, that allowed me to become his brother.
This then led Calvin to write further about his experience with bullying and how it's affected him over the years.
My story, it was a response to Melvin. It leads into me telling about how I was bullied and how it continued through high school, actually at work. And, you know, I even see bullies to this day. But Melvin, his apology was made so long ago when they became friends. I believe that it was put there in that point in time for them to meet each other, to clash with each other, for everything else to follow. With something in the stars, because if you don't have Melvin Sherrod, you don't have the situation that created everything else.
Freedom Riders have said countless times that that picture changed everything. It caused Miss G to pivot her teaching to tolerance education and focus on helping her students overcome their prejudices by forming sincere bonds based on mutual acceptance. Ultimately, it kickstarted a journey of self-discovery for her students that led to them putting pen to paper for the very first time. That's the legacy they're inhabiting as they write for the 20th anniversary edition.
We started there. That horrifically racist note, that caricature that could have had a very tragic ending. We looked at questions of what is the Holocaust and that journey that not only led us to going to museums and meeting Holocaust survivors and seeing movies like Schindler's List and reading about Anne Frank to going to those places. You know, we've gone to the Middle East and tried to make magic where people were separated with walls and stereotypes and stigmas. And so we tear down walls and we build bridges. So we had to write about that. So very early on, we established an honor code, and that honor code was about bearing your soul so others could bear witness. What I loved about the original version of the Freedom Riders Diary is the ups and the downs and the twists and the turns and how raw and how gritty and unconventional the stories were. We dealt with taboos and societal ills, and yet there was that happy ending. They made it, they graduated, and were sent out into the world. And like any good homing pigeon, you hope that their wings are strong enough that they come home. So when we sat down to craft the 20 new stories, what was so important for us was to once again go back to that mantra and that honor code of keeping it real. So we can't out the gate make everything perfect because life is messy and we're messy. And we like to believe that we are perfectly imperfect. So in our imperfections, how can we tell that story How do we tell that perfectly imperfect story to an audience member who is struggling with addiction, struggling with debilitating racism that has not gone away and sometimes is more rampant than ever? How do we deal with bullies, whether they're in a classroom or in a position of power? So it was really important for us to be unvarnished and gritty and raw today, like we were gritty and raw and unvarnished in room 203.
Well, how would you summarize your diary entry? What's at the heart of your new story?
What I end up talking about is the relationship with my dad. I didn't have my dad growing up. I was raised by my mom and my sister, but I survived a major car accident. And it was a miracle that I'm not in a wheelchair today. So if we don't learn to forgive one another, we could look back and live in regret.
The writing process for me had me really take a look back into my history. I know my story talks about my father and my mom's experience growing up in the 60s. To go back and relive that history with them as they tell me their stories, I almost felt like a parent wanting to nurture them because they weren't given the opportunities that I was given. They didn't have a Miss G. My mom especially was told to sit down, you know, when it was time for her to be acknowledged in education, because it wasn't the ability of a young Black girl to go up and get an award in front of her white counterparts. So I felt so remorseful, but grateful and humble that I was able to tell my story for my parents, be that beacon of light. I know when they see me, they see themselves, and that's all that matters to me.
Nobody in this world wants to lose somebody they love. Because I lost somebody I loved, it changed my perspective. What more could I possibly lose? Because in my mind, I've already lost everything. So to not only be able to talk about it, but to feel that I'm no longer alone in what I was dealing with, it was just such a relief to write it down, to let it out. I got to free myself from my own prison, my own wall, my own guarded heart, to understand what courage really is and understand not why it happened, but what I can do about what happened.
So it was celebratory. It was painful when freedom riders fall, because freedom riders fall. But when they fall forward. When they fall, there's someone in their family, their Freedom Rider family, to catch them. And we wanted that to come across with each and every word and each and every story.
To me, that's what's most inspiring about the Freedom Rider stories. They are honest and raw and unvarnished, as Aaron said. The Freedom Riders have had great success over the last 20 years. And like everyone else, they still face struggles. I believe what makes them extraordinary is what they choose to do about it.
My story is about not only my journey through my addiction and now into recovery from drugs and alcohol, but how my mother's choices and her addiction influenced me later in life.
This is Cynthia's story.
And, you know, I'm honored and blessed to have recovery in my life today and to see her on the other side of it, still dealing with her addiction, the loneliness, and all of the things that come with it. It was a beautiful opportunity to be able to put down on paper why I've made the decisions I've made in my life and why I have chosen to work as 12-step program and to be a part of that today.
I was an overweight, long-haired, fear-stricken child.
This is Michael.
And I was having a lot of disciplinary issues at my school at a young age. I first took my first sip of alcohol at probably 11 or 12 years old. And so it started escalating from there. At 15 years old, you know, drinking a 12-pack of beer a day was the normal for me. That's the only thing I could think about, was getting out of school and drinking or leaving school and drinking. I didn't have anybody in my life to say, hey, there's other things you can do too to make you feel good besides drinking. It was very dark and it just kind of turned me into a very fear-stricken, angry person. And so that had evolved into the person that had stepped into Miss Gruel's class. Miss Gruel showed me at that time that writing could really set me free, and it made me feel great. It was taking all my anger and all my fear and letting it pulsate out into brighter things. Miss Gruel got me through that school. She really did. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have made it. I mean, I was going down a path of bad choices my entire life, but it wasn't until after I had graduated that I realized that I'm gonna do the exact 180 on this. No alcohol, no cigarette smoke, no unhealthy foods, exercise. And I just got addicted to that stuff. And it wasn't enough. I kept picking up other hobbies. I started speaking and selling and creating and socializing. And I started feeding myself all these things without the negative, and I became a force. Created my own power bar company. I bought stakes in another one, did extremely well. Met a girl that changed my life. And I realized that I have passion and purpose, and I want to embrace that. So 4 years ago, I decided that I'm going to do what I'm really good at, and that's helping people that struggle with addiction. People trusted me because I came from their same point, and now I'm operations manager at a treatment center, and that's changing lives. It's the best of all worlds. I have my passion and purpose at my job where I change lives suffering from addiction, and then I have the Freedom Riders where I can go reach youth and stop them from getting addicted, right? Help them.
It's easy to put facts down on paper. My mom wasn't there for me, you know, I had a bad life, but it's difficult to really add those details that really help other people to empathize and to connect with it. It's not an efficient process. Anything that's as therapeutic as this and as cathartic, it is a group effort. It's a group energy. And once you leave those meetings, you end up feeling pumped. You have some suggestions. The story that I started with and the story that I ended with are two completely different stories. And it's because you find, okay, where's the real meat of this story? And that's where Miss G truly is gifted, is she is able to help people find what's special about themselves. And the other Freedom Riders, we can help encourage that. But really being able to find what's special about me, what's special about my story, when there's millions of other people suffering just like it, and then to allow all these stories to connect to one another, it definitely is an art. I was always cognizant of who came before me and who came after me. And what I appreciated is that we not only have somebody who is 14 years into recovery, so he's able to give it from an administrative and from somebody who has deeper roots in his program. And then we have other types of addictions as well. We have, you know, the Overeaters Anonymous. And I think that these are both important aspects of recovery, to know that it doesn't just mean you're doing, you know, illegal drugs in the street and you're in jail and all these things. There's other parts to recovery and working through mental illness or through any type of addiction. And so I think in writing my story, I was cognizant of where I was so that I could help to fill the space that we needed. And I think each writer was aware of that when they were writing, and we made the necessary adjustments and decisions in how we told our story so that we would all be a smooth, cohesive group. It is truly an art, and it's a gift that Miss G has, not just with the stories, but connecting with people as well.
And I think that was really exciting. It was a tapestry and it was a puzzle piece, trying to figure out what story fit where. Where do we start and how do we end? What was the literary arc? And one of the things I admire so deeply about the Freedom Riders is their unconditional ability to love and trust one another. And they're able to be vulnerable and raw and exposed because of that love.
The story process this time collectively was the help of all the Freedom Riders in a different way. We were more experienced this time. We were able to have this life experience and then speak the truth. I can share this. I can be open with my fellow Freedom Riders because I've been able to heal myself from anything that's happened in the past. I can move forward with knowing that the Freedom Riders weren't going to be malicious or backbite a little bit and have that high school type of behavior. It was, this is my brother, this is my sister. I want to make sure that I'm telling her story or allowing her to tell her story in her most truthful and raw self.
There's safety in numbers. The fact that we were all ready to put this down on paper, because we know that it's part of a bigger picture. It's part of a bigger movement. It's always good to be able to reflect on the past, to make sure you're going a good course, and writing it down forces you to confront it. It's permanent. That's forever. That's a part of history. And no matter what happens, you'll always have that there. Deep down, everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to feel safe. We all need to get back on that same page, realize that we're all one race per se, just the human race as a whole. And Love always wins. Darkness can't prevail. Light will always shine, and we will always be that light.
The Freedom Writers' stories have undoubtedly evolved since Room 203. Their wise words now include accountability and reconciliation as they write about love and loss, injustice and disappointment, and the ultimate victory over adversity. Their growth is an exquisite example of hope and transformation. As Miss G and the Freedom Writers put the finishing touches on the manuscript, a recurring theme becomes clear to them in all 20 new diary entries: the healing power of storytelling. Not only is this manifest in the written pages themselves, the Freedom Writers are living it in real time. What stories still need to be told? What darkness still looms, and can it be revealed and enveloped by the Freedom Writers' ever-searching light? I know we'll find out soon. That concludes episode 3 of Freedom Writer 2020, a special mini-series on the Freedom Writers podcast celebrating 20 years of the Freedom Writers Diary. Today, the Freedom Writers Foundation and Penguin Random House are proud to announce our limited-time Freedom Writers Diary giveaway. Starting today, September 5th, through Thursday, September 12th, you can enter for the chance to win one of 20 free copies of the 20th Anniversary Edition, signed personally by Aaron Gruel and the Freedom Writers. To enter, follow the link in this episode's show notes, or check out our posts about it on the Freedom Writers Foundation social media channels. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying Freedom Writer 2020 so far, we hope you'll share it with someone you know and love. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the Freedom Writers podcast and kindly leave us a review. Once again, this episode was executive produced by Aaron Gruel, co-produced by Rob Falk, and written, produced, and edited by me, your host, Bryce Sirier. Remember to stay tuned for our next installment of Freedom Writer 2020, available tomorrow morning, September 6th. In the meantime, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.